For the past decade, our teams have been working incredibly hard to make some big and much-needed changes in how we develop leaders while at work. I challenge you to forge your own path in your own leadership evolution. Consider one that makes the lives of people around you in the business better by building more purpose-driven leaders and relationships with your teams. We need to build leaders who truly care about those they see and engage each and every day. We invite you to hear more about our own leadership and cultural journey, and the impactful stories will surely resonate with you and your teams.
Welcome back to the Built to Lead podcast, brought to you by the Lippert Academy for Leadership. My name is Edgar Cabello. I am one of the leadership directors here at Lippert, and it's my pleasure to be back. And this season, we're spending a lot of time focusing on the stories of our people across the company. And great honor today to have with me Patrick Moore. Pimo is his nickname. And he's one of our leaders in the chassis division. And so, Pimo, welcome, man.
Glad to have you, Edgar. Yep. Good to be here. Yeah. I appreciate the invite to come and share my story with you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Help us get to know Pat Moore.
All right. Well, I am originally from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I'm very proud of this fact. People know me as a Youper. Okay. If you know, that's in the Webster Dictionary now as a real word.
That's a real word now.
That's a real word. All right. Yeah. We grew up on pasties and snow.
What's a pasty?
A pasty. Okay. A pasty comes from Cornwall, England. In the 1800s, the iron ore was very rich in the Upper Peninsula, but it was underwater. And so they had to bring in the specialists that knew how to mine underwater, and those were the English. And so they settled in our area in the late 1880s and brought with them their number one snack from Cornwall, their meal. It is basically pie crust with meat and potatoes and rutabaga inside.
Oh.
Yep. And we use Youper gravy, which is ketchup. Yep. It is a delicious snack. You eat with your hands, not with a fork.
Is that right?
Yep. The miners would put it in their pocket and they'd go out of the mine and they would heat it up on their headlamp, if you will. And, okay. And they'd have that for lunch. And that was their everything they needed all in one. So
Youper gravy is ketchup.
Ketchup. Okay. You got that right.
Yeah. All right. That was a history lesson and a cooking lesson.
And you're hungry now, too,
I'm
are you?
Very hungry, yeah. And I want to go north. Don't know why. All right, so that's great, man. Yep. What else? Give us a little bit more about like where you come from.
Sure. Yeah, so I went to Ferris State University in downstate Michigan for college as a construction management major and a minor in civil engineering. And I really, really wanted to build houses for the rest of my life. I enjoyed doing that as a teen, late teens. That was my summer job, was work in construction. So I really liked doing that. I had a friend that went to Alma College right down the street from Ferris, and he was a football player there. And he got recruited by a company called Lippert that was based out of Alma to come and join their leader in training program. He was going to move out east to a plant in West Virginia, and he encouraged me to come and interview with Lippert and come with him. So I decided to do that, take that leap and move out east. And so I started my career with Lippert in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia, at a chassis plant right in the Shenandoah Mountains. Beautiful place. I started learning, you know, what welding chassis meant. I learned how to weld. I was a floater. I worked online welding with team members. I say welding with air quotes. It was not the best welding, but I sure was trying. I was considered a junior trainee at the time, and I worked for a leader named Steve Jenkins, who still remains with the company. Mm-hmm. He was young in his career at the time, and so I started off my career with him.
Yeah.
After a couple years, Indiana was the epicenter for where RVs were made. And so I got in my car and everything I owned fit in the back seat. And I drove to Goshen, Indiana. And when I got to Goshen, I understood what that meant when you see RV after RV after RV in the area. So I started at Plant 19 in Goshen, working with Steve again in that operation. And I've been in chassis my entire career. It'll be 20 years coming in May now.
Wow.
The company, working at Plant 19 all the way up until 2011, in which I opened up another facility in Middlebury called Plant 28, which is my home today.
All right.
So it's my journey. It's been Pure Chassis here at Lippert. We claim to be the foundation of the company. One of the older businesses that we have, but it's a play on words. We are the foundation of RVs, and so it's gives us a lot of pride knowing that customers can't start their day without our product.
Right.
Hey, this is Dr. Amber Selking, Vice President of Leadership and Culture here at Lippert, and I'd like to formally invite you to join us at the Purpose Summit 2022 to be held at the University of Notre Dame May 17th, 18th, and 19th. Please check out all the details on our website at www.thepurposesummit.com, where you can find information on everything, including our amazing speaker lineup, including Frank Cooper, the Chief Marketing Officer from BlackRock, Matt Breitfelder, the Global Talent Officer for Apollo Wealth Management, and our very own CEO, Jason Lippert. Join us and other leaders from around the world to engage in this critical conversation and movement to make business a force for good in the world.
Hey, give me a little bit of like, so 20 years in one company, like that says a lot. 20 years in the same division building this product, that says something too. What is it like to be in the chassis division? I'm not in the chassis division, so I know very little. But like, how do you describe the culture? Just, I'm talking about more like the work life part of it.
Sure.
Because it's a gritty business.
Sure. Yeah, it absolutely is. And I'll start with when somebody comes to visit and they open our doors and they look, and you can see it in their eyes. It's almost a wow moment. We have people that... team members that are welding chassis. There's sparks. Mm. There's fire. There's steel. There's oil. There's dirt. There's a lot going on. Yeah. I like to stand back and I always think of, you know, early manufacturing and I think of America, honestly. Yeah, when I see it, it just gives me a lot of pride just to watch what we do. But our team members are not just welders. We call them fabricators. They weld maybe 10% of their time. The rest of their time, they're marking out and fitting and forming different pieces to put together the chassis. We build quite a few chassis for the county. Fifth wheels and travel trailers are the two main types that we build, but mainly consist of an I-beam or tube main rail with cross members welded every 48 inches with bumpers and couplers and different outriggers, different parts, depending on what the customer needs. And it is an environment that it's really difficult to learn at first.
Okay.
It's something you have to get used to. These
guys, what's the tough part about it? What's the learning curve there?
Yeah, I think, you know, coming in, you're wearing steel toe boots, you're wearing long jeans, you're wearing, you know, leather chaps, you're wearing a leather coat, you're wearing a beanie on the top of your head, you're wearing a hood, you're wearing big leather gloves, you're wearing sleeves, so number one, the PPE side of it, to be safe in welding, you've got to have these items. Yeah. And that's a lot to learn. That's a, you know, your first 30 days, you're just getting used to that.
Yes.
Being able to squeeze your hand in a big leather glove that, you know, takes some time. So, and then on top of that, you're reading blueprints and you're welding, you know, with all of that PPE gear on. So it isn't easy. The first 30 days is really important for our team members to kind of get used to that and get used to the pace of building chassis and welding. Yeah. So
I'm getting the picture. Chassis is a tough business to be into. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the character and the qualities that somebody needs to jump into that team, like they got to be able to tough it out for a little bit. I'm hearing you talk about piling all the PPE, the protective gear, and so forth. And like, we have some hot summers up here, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that gets a little taxing from time to time. So I'm getting the picture, man, of what it's like to live in your world. If you would, Pat, take us back a little bit. So with the company for 20 years, you've heard the terminology. I know I have, you know, where Old Lippert was described as being kind of Wild West. And then, you know, along the way, we've gone through a cultural shift to be what we are today. And I know your story, like your personal story, really gets weaved into that whole timeline of what happened, what was going on 10, 15 years ago, what happened 10 years ago, and so on and so forth. Like, give me a little background about like what Wild West meant to you. Like, what did you, what were the expressions that you saw? And give me an example or two. Yeah. I'd love to hear it.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, looking at 20 years, I think of the first 10 and the second 10. And in that first 10, there are definitely, you know, some situations. You know, a lot of people ask, hey, what was it like prior to us really focusing on our culture? It must must have been really bad. And honestly, I sit back and think, you know, there's definitely opportunities and things that I would have changed, but overall, we were successful. We were still winning. We were passionate about that winning. We were building relationships with our teams. We were building friendships. We were a relatively young team at the time. And so you're building bonds that we still have today with so many people from that time. So so there's a lot of wins that also come out of that. But you know, some of the examples of, you know, when we talk about our culture and in the Wild West, I still remember, you know, a way that we managed our hours. We had a leader that would stand at the window at the top of the plant, and when he felt we needed to go home and make sure everybody was punched out, he would command that we turn the power off to the building. And so, you know, instead of giving people a stop time or letting them know what the schedule was going to be, when the power went out, that meant it was time to go
home. It's time to go home.
Yeah. And so, you know, as a frontline leader at the time, that was really difficult for me to deal with. To, you know, we had team members that said, listen, I don't want to be behind in the morning, so I'm going to stay. Even if the lights are off, I'm going to stay and get ahead. That was their mentality, whatever it took. And that wasn't good enough for our leader. If somebody was still working, you would get a call on the radio to walk to that person and tell them to leave.
Right.
Those were conversations that some were really, really good at having. It was really easy to go down and kind of yell. You didn't even have to go to the person. Yeah. You could probably yell from 30 feet away and tell the person that they need to go home. But there, you know, there was things like that going on that we had to make decisions. You know, do I fall in that trap? Do I go and use my voice and scream and holler to make sure people get my point? Or do I try and protect this team member from this scenario? And that could be making plans to say, hey, I know you don't want to be behind, so you know what, I'll meet you here at 5 tomorrow morning and I'll help you get out ahead. Mm-hmm. And those were decisions that we made.
So I'm just hearing you say, like, it just didn't sit well with you.
No.
So, I mean, yeah, somebody, they pulled the switch on the power. It basically means get the hell out.
Yep.
And you guys are expected to kind of carry that message.
Yep.
And
yep.
Not a real high premium on being super respectful about it.
Right.
It's like, get the hell out.
Yep. Get out. We got to save money. That's basically what
it was.
And
that's it. You're done. And so I love what you're saying, but, like, I'm hearing just kind of like, there's a little bit of a struggle inside of you going on at this
Absolutely,
point.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't raised that way to treat people that way or to communicate that way. And, you know, sometimes those that were able to communicate that way got the juice, if you will. They were favored in the organization. They had the courage. They had the strength to be able to go and execute that direction. And, you know, for me, I kind of felt like I was perceived as weak because I didn't take that path. Tried to protect my team from that. It was something that was very difficult because, again, you're having your top-level leader expect you to carry through that message and in the way that he wants it done. But I promise at the end of the day, that's not how I'm ever going to operate. And so we had to get creative in how we communicate that and still, you know, get what we needed to get done from our leader. But at the same time, you know, thinking about the team member and really the whole operation.
And of course, at that time, like, you enjoyed working for Lippert in those days.
Yeah.
And so, like, you want to take steps forward. You want to grow in your career. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have aspirations and you've also got this struggle. Like, mm-hmm. Before we started recording, you just shared something with me that you had written down in preparation for today. And I don't, man, if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to read that, because to me it sounded very thoughtful and thought provoking.
Yeah, sure. Like to share this. I call this license to care. I recall as a young leader following like I was a shield for my team. The negativity or unfairness would be blocked from my team to the best of my ability. Showing care for others was made to be a weakness. Get tough or get out. You need to know something about me. I'm loyal to a fault. I don't have it in me to knowingly let someone get the best of me. So my toughness was birthed from having to shield my team from any negativity. When culture took a left-hand turn, it truly gave me the feeling I could care for my team, and it gave me the license to care. So I get emotional talking about that because I truly have a care for every person that I come in contact with in our organization. Mm-hmm. They're there to build a future for their family. They're there to help, you know, their family achieve their dreams. They're there to help the company achieve our dreams. Mm. Why we would, you know, treat them anything but, you know, in a positive light.
In those words that you wrote, like something that got my attention right away, because it's the abrupt language about the culture taking a left-hand turn. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like that was the pivot point for you. Yeah. So yeah, I'm curious. We talked about the first 10 years. Let's talk a little bit about the second 10.
You know, after 10 years of being here, made a change. And I attribute that to our leader, Jason. It has to come from him for us to really be serious about wanting to change our culture. And man, does he provide the inspiration and the motivation for our teams. For me personally, I was just recently married in that time, 2009, you know, 8 years in. I had my first kid in 2010 and my second in 2013. So that period for me was some pretty heavy thinking on what I want to be doing, you know, for a career for the next 30 years. Sure. And I had some serious discussions with my family about the time and the effort that I was putting forth at Lippert. And, you know, there was some discussions about what do I want to do in the future? You know, because of this shift in our culture, this announcement that we're going to start to take steps towards changing our culture, we were offered a leadership coach that came to our plant, and I met with this coach, Mike Gardy, and asked some questions about what I want for my future. What do I want to be known for? What is my obituary say, if you will? And it was just the right timing for me, and it got me thinking about what I want to do. And he related the business and tied it to my goals and aspirations of, you know, being a leader that cares about people and being a leader that wants to see people be successful, a leader that wants to watch his team grow and have impact at home with families. And he made me realize that I'm in the seat that I need to be. You know, we talk about the impact that leadership has, not just on your 20 people that report to you or your 1,000 people that work at the facility, but their families and their extended families outside of work. And man, did that energize me, feeling that like I could make that impact. We at the plant started down a path then of creating some core values for ourselves, for just our plant. And, you know, that 6-month transition for us where we sat in an office, instead of talking about, you know, shutting the power down so everybody would go home, we talked about what do we want to be known for? What are some words that describe what we want to be known for? And I still remember the three words that we came up with then. That was satisfaction, teamwork, and pride. Wow. We wanted people to leave being satisfied with the work that they did. We wanted people to love, you know, working as a team and that team dynamic. And then the chassis division, the work that we do, it's not easy always. It's fabrication and having that pride to do that. So, you know, at that time, it was perfect for me. You know, I was tired of feeling like I'm constantly swimming upstream. And I think, you know, without our CEO communicating that this is something that we're going to do and we're serious about it and we're going to stick to it and we're going to give everybody the opportunity to take those steps to become better leaders, to me that galvanized the rest of my career. I plan to be with Lippert until I retire. That first 10 years, that was definitely a pivot point for me.
This episode of Lippert Built to Lead podcast is brought to you by the Lippert Academy for Leadership, the team committed to enhancing your organization's leadership and cultural goals with strategic leadership development programs, on-site training, executive coaching, speaking engagement, and customized solutions. Find out how to get your organization involved at www.lci1.com/academy or send us a message at academy@lci1.com. That's academy@lci1.com.
When you talk about going back and the messaging that, I don't know if anybody ever actually told you this or if you just heard it, but like that you're weak. And here you are 20 years later, you know, and I mean, I would argue that there takes a tremendous amount of strength to be able to sort through your own life and then swimming upstream in a culture that's telling you to do everything that goes against your moral fiber, right?
Yeah.
And so like when I hear you say that, man, like it gives me an appreciation for the kind of strength and even being around for as long as you have, like you're part of our backbone. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's I see happening, and I haven't been around but for a quarter of that time. And I'm grateful for people that you, that in my mind, actually pioneered this thing. I said the same thing to Jenks when I talked to him, you know, with Steve. I was just like, you're the pioneers, guy. You're the guys who went down and cut down the tall grass for us so that we could live out what we're living right now. Because the world that you kind of were introduced to when you first came on as a college kid, that's not the world we live in anymore, man. It's right. Very different, yeah, isn't it?
For sure. You know, there's just a great pride for this family-run company. You know, I remember right during the change of our culture, we talked about the Lippert name and you know, what it meant in our communities. And it was amazing to hear people talk about going to Walmart and seeing people with a Lippert jacket and feeling like they should cover it up. Mm. What that meant for Jason, who, that's his family name on that coat,
yeah,
you know?
And, yeah,
and so the moment that you're told you can care, yeah, the moment that you're told that, hey, these are things that we absolutely need to be doing. And matter of fact, you're good at it. And I need you to teach everybody else how to do those things.
Wait a minute, what just happened?
Over my first 10 years of running an operation, you referenced kind of war or battle.
Yeah.
And we absolutely went through a lot of battles.
Of course.
And again, you're battling, you know, demand, you're battling, you know, turnover, you're battling poor leadership. That really galvanized us at that time to not want to give up. I mean, we went through those battles not to walk away from that, not to, you know, give the keys to somebody else.
Sure.
We went through those battles because we truly loved our team, loved our business of what we did, and we wanted to see it through to the next level. And at the time, talking about leadership and safety and lean at the time, our three pillars, it was something that we had to make sure that we were still running our business as well as learning some of the new behaviors of sure, what a new leader looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're like during this time, like you're changing the entire profile for what a Lippert leader is, you,
yeah,
know, like I'm more familiar with the 21st century version, you know, or at least the 2015 and beyond version,
yeah,
of what that means.
Yeah.
But like, so you're reorienting, man, like everything is kind of shifting around and I mean, what's happening like on your team? Some people maybe are a little confused by this.
Yeah.
Some are having to make decisions about like, can I get down with this? Like there's, in its own way, it seems like the culture is kind of going through a washing machine cycle or something like
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we were the guys that shut the power off, right?
Yeah.
We were the guys that shut the power off and closed the doors. And that was the sign that we had to leave. And now we're writing cards to each other, expressing how much we appreciate what they're doing. You,
yeah,
know? It truly, you know, felt weird sometimes. Right.
Right?
I mean, are people going to trust that I'm being authentic here? Do they feel like we're just playing this game?
Yeah.
And the great thing is you know, a lot of our leaders have been through that battle and, yeah, and can talk with honesty with our teams about where we were and where we aspired to be and where we want to be. So
yeah,
there was credibility and trust developed. Certainly at first there was questioning on how long this flavor of the month would last.
Of course.
But you know, we were consistent with it. Certainly we changed, you know, you'd make a plan. Does it work? It worked for a little while and then it,
yeah,
didn't work. You made some changes on the fly, but overall we held each other accountable, our leaders, team members, everybody, yeah, in our organization for, you know, understanding what direction we're looking to take and
that's right,
what we aspire to be. And, you know, and it, there was some hard conversations. And again, I think there was a lot of people that bottled some of that up inside and felt a relief that now they can kind of express really what they want to be as a leader.
Yeah, that's right. I look at it this way, you know, I think, you know, when I hear you guys describe what it was like, and even when I got here 5 years ago, it was, you know, it's not what it is now, 5 years later.
Right.
And so, you know, I can use the term like in dinosaur terms, like that roughneck leader is like almost extinct now,
yep,
at Lippert, you,
yep,
know, because I'd say we become much more clear about what a Lippert leader is, what he or she does, and how they care for their people. And there's not a lot of negotiation for that anymore,
yep,
you know? So whereas before there was a non-negotiation, you know, you got to be tough and you're going to be tough on your people. And that's just the way it is. I mean, the script has entirely flipped. And
yeah,
and I know, you know, like we said just moments ago, like you guys kind of laying, the foundation for that, I think, is critically important for where we're at today. I know a bunch of stuff has changed for you. And the other thing that I've learned about you is, like, you're kind of an entertainment guy, yeah, from what I understand. So I know you've done different events around here. Tell us a little bit about what you do when you're not, like, making chassis, yeah, or leading teams who make chassis.
Sure. Well, I was born with a gift, and that gift is understanding humor and being able to use humor in my conversations. I think I'm funny. There's a lot out there that don't think I'm funny.
Does your wife think you're funny?
She does not think I'm funny. Yeah,
That's how it works usually.
When we had our first child, we were heading to the hospital, and she said, "Nothing you say today will be funny." So I carry that with me. But I like to keep it light. I like to have fun, no matter if I'm at work or I'm at home. And so, yeah, I do a lot of things with our community. That's another great alignment that the company is encouraging is community involvement.
What are you involved in?
Yeah, so I'm part of a Kiwanis club in town. Okay. They're a global organization dedicated to improving the world one child and one community at a time. So we focus on the youth of our community. It gets me out meeting people and doing different events. But we basically raise money for youth events, Cub Scouts, teen parents succeeding, a lot of different groups around our youth. I am very active in athletics coaching. I'm on a board for the Wawasee Community Summer League Baseball Program. And I also serve on a board for a youth center in town, Lakeland Youth Center, which is a activities nonprofit that also has a preschool. So yeah. I love my town. You know, through the leadership journey and my leadership coaching, one of the things that I learned was influence and making sure that you know what is influencing you as a person, as a leader. There's a lot of things that can influence you, from church to TV to newspapers to parents. And so making sure that you know what influences you and along with that, not getting so wound up about things that influence you that you have no control over. Right. And so I started with focusing on my house and making sure that I had things, you know, aligned there. And after that, moved to my street and encouraged my neighbors to get involved. And I'm at to the point now where I'm focusing on my town, where I live and where my kids live and play and go to school. So, but I do a lot of events. I have another name besides Pimo, and that is DJ Nitro.
DJ Nitro.
DJ Nitro. And you have to know.
You spin the discs, do you?
I don't spin the discs. Okay. No, I am the least professional DJ you know. I use my iPhone but I love microphones. And
why do you do the DJ thing, man?
I just do it because I think there's a song for every moment in life, and I enjoy playing music. And you know, if we're doing a car show, I'm gonna play the perfect song every 5 minutes.
Look at that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so I just think it improves every environment, having good music. And
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And so I also have a voice that I use. Growing up in the UP, we had one radio station, and so John Kohler was a radio personality there, and so I use his voice. Do you mind if I give you a little bit here?
I was gonna make that request if you
all
did.
Right, we're here in the RV talking with Edgar Cabello here, talking about Pat Moore, the Lippert leader that's been around for 20 years in the chassis division. This message is brought to you by Hardee's. Stop in for the $5 burger at Hardee's, located on Stevenson Avenue. This is WLCI. We'll be right back after this.
That's perfect. I don't know who this guy is. I like him, though. I have no. That is fantastic.
So, yeah.
Do you have a couple more of those, I wonder?
I do, yeah.
I thought maybe you did.
Yeah, we could do a Good Morning Shopping Show. I like to do the shopping show bit here. Today on the shopping show, we've got pasties. Buy one, get one free from Econo Foods. Normally $5. Today, going for $3. Call us at 774-5731. Also, we've got $10 Hoppy Quick Lube tickets here today. Normally $20, going for $15 on the show. That's a limit of 2 per caller. Call us in at 5731 and we'll get those straight away to you. This
great.
Is the shopping show.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Dying art right there.
Yeah.
Dying
definitely,
art.
Definitely. So,
I dig it, man.
So at our plant meetings, you never know what you're going to get.
Okay. And you know, we were part of a meeting together last week that there just happened to be a piano in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that when things were wrapping up, you went ahead and kind of took your turn, tickled the ivories there for a little bit. Are you a musician?
I am not a musician. I don't play any instruments. I love music and I would love to play. I'm a one other interesting thing, I'm a twin. So growing up, my mom found activities that we could do separate. And so she put my brother in piano lessons and me not in piano lessons. So I don't play a ton of piano. I know a couple songs. So
okay.
You
I heard one
to
of
hear
them.
The one that I know, Edgar. And I'm glad nobody asked for a follow-up because I would have walked right out the door.
It's so, great. Yeah. No, I love it. And just for your own understanding that, so you're the one of... Like this, you're the second set of twins, I guess. I know it's solo and brother isn't with you right now, mm-hmm. but we were just interviewing a couple of twins a moment ago.
Oh, really?
Right here at Plant 58.
Okay.
So just so you know, a little trivia then
Excellent.
For days to come. So,
Excellent.
Pat, I love what you've been saying today. And let me just say this. Here's what I know about you, because you and I haven't known each other for very long, because it's easy to not know people in a big company mm-hmm. like this, right?
Yeah.
Like I've heard your name, you know, circulated here and there. But here's something that I do know about you within this company. A lot of people love and respect you, man. Like you are that your reputation like precedes you. It goes out. I knew that about you before I ever spoke a word to you. And I just want you to know that, man. Like, so your investment and your strength through some trying times has paid off.
Yeah.
And so many of us have benefited from the price that you paid to help get us here. So I think I can safely say that on behalf of many, I'm just going to say thanks, bro. Like, we really appreciate you. And for the strength that you showed during a time where you were struggling through, that says something about your character. It says something about your loyalty. Mm-hmm. And it certainly speaks to our hearts, man. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
So, Pimo, as we start wrapping up this conversation, by the way, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, man, it's been really good getting to know you even like this. Final thought or challenge would you have for people that might be listening? Because the kind of folks that are listening to this are interested in leadership. Mm-hmm. They want to see cultural transformation. I mean, honestly, they want to experience the very thing that you just described.
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
Yeah, what I'd like to leave with everybody that's listening today is you know, just looking at the world that we live in and understanding what influences you, and make sure that you understand what influences you, and as a leader, as a community member, as a father, as a mother, know that people are watching you and your reactions yeah. to things. You could hear something on the news and react in a way that influences five people that just watched you. So it's something that we all should be aware of, whether yeah. you're in a leadership role or if you're just a community member. You know, you can influence others by your behaviors and by the tone of your voice and the things that you say. I'd love to be a part of a group of people that look at things with a little bit more positivity.
There you go.
And try and shift the world.
I love that, man. And we feel that from you. Like, we really do. We feel that, like, positive energy, and appreciate that. And so, folks, as we wrap up our time together with Pat Moore, DJ Nitro, I can't remember the names of the voices that you gave us just a moment ago, but so appreciate, man, the joy that you bring into our workplace every single day and your stick-to-itiveness. So he's a great example, this guy, of what it's like to live through a cultural transformation. And at Lippert, we're committed to helping not just our own people, we certainly are, but also other organizations start and take their first steps on their leadership and culture journey. So if there's any way that we could help you and come alongside you and maybe provide a DJ for you, we'd be happy to do that. Please feel free to reach out to us at academy@lci1.com. And let us know how we can come alongside you. We'd be happy to start a conversation to get you started on your journey. Pimo, it's been fun, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Edgar, thanks for having me. And I'll just leave you with this. This is DJ Nitro wrapping up here on WLCI. Have a good night.
And that's it for today, folks. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for joining us, and know that together we can use the 40 or 50 hours a week we have to influence and impact others and truly make business a force for good in this world. If you don't mind, do me a favor and leave your comments for us and share this episode with a few people. The world needs this message. Thanks again for joining us.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the view or mission of Lippert Components Incorporated.